Welcome to the Experience Points Podcast, episode 11 for Wednesday, February 4th, 2009. Welcome
back to the Experience Points Podcast. I'm Scott Juster.
And I'm George Alboy.
And we are the co-creators of experiencepoints.blogspot.com, a site we created for serious but not humorless discussions on video games and culture.
Mm-hmm. And how.
And this week, we are talking about two short, quick news stories, both about video games in schools.
Yes. One of them comes from a while ago, and it's from Kotaku, and that was regarding we helping snowbound schools make PE fun. So I guess this is what happens in upstate New York when apparently this thing called snow happens. Yeah, I've never seen it myself.
We wouldn't know about this living in the Bay Area.
Sunny California.
But evidently there's this weather phenomenon in which moisture freezes.
Mm-hmm. And so kids can't go outside, and they've been using the Wii to play, I guess, Wii Sports?
They said that they bought a DDR pack, and I'm sure they have the balance board. And basically, if kids are stuck inside the gym, this is just another thing for them to do and still have PE.
Right. And then the next article also comes from Kotaku, and this is a more recent one regarding the Nintendo DS being used to teach English in Japan.
Yeah.
And so this was in a Kyoto prefecture, and I believe it was middle school and high school students, or elementary school students, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And they were using the DS, I guess, to play, you know, My English Coach. Or
you know, it's one of the lifestyle type games that DS is coming out. It's a DS game, and there's a few hundred English words and phrases and sentences that they can use to practice their English classes.
Yeah. It says the DS software will contain 600 words and 150 phrases.
Yeah.
I wonder if that'll include swear words.
Maybe they can make it viral like the Animal Crossing fiasco that happened a couple months ago. So we thought that this was a good opportunity to talk about video games in school in a variety of ways. How they're used, how they've changed as far as the images of video games, and what role video games might play in schools in the upcoming and more distant future.
Yeah.
So I think, like, right now, maybe we should talk about how we use video games in school, if at all. And then maybe a little bit, because we don't really know how video games are used in school today, because we haven't been in grade school for a really long time.
But, speak, you know, for yourself, yeah. Scott.
but we probably have a pretty good idea, because I have younger cousins and stuff. I talk to them about things.
Sure.
So what video games did you play in school? Like, and this is not... I mean, we should probably not covertly, like, you know, like legitimate.
Because I did that a lot.
I know.
I mean, Lemmings.
Everyone, you know, does the alt tab real quick when their teacher's coming over or hides their Game Boy under the table.
Sure. The ones that I remember well are Math Blaster.
Uh-huh. Math Blaster.
Which was a very fun game. In all reality,
there was a lot of different Math Blasters, too. There was some that taught you fractions. There was some that were more algebra-oriented.
Yeah, I think they had even, like, Word Blasters, too, right?
Mm-hmm. The Math Blaster franchise is a long and storied one.
Yeah. I must not have been good at that game, because I'm terrible with math. So that failed on me.
If you could do math with, like, a little green astronaut running around at all times.
Maybe that's it.
Maybe it would help you.
Maybe it's because they stopped using that.
Maybe if Microsoft Excel could integrate a little green astronaut, you'd be better at math.
Get on that, developers. Yeah. The other one that I played a lot, I guess, was Oregon Trail. And that was both covert and overt, because it was not always approved when I used it.
Yeah.
You know, I was playing Oregon Trail a lot when I should have been writing an essay about my
or something. There was definitely times where the class would go to the computer lab or the one computer, you know, people would get their computer time, and it was a legitimate thing to do. Like, the teachers were cool with it as long as you finished, you know, whatever assignment you were doing.
Right, because you're supposed to be learning, you know, survival skills and, you know, always pick the banker, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, after a while, it just... You gotta go with what else was there? Like the banker, wasn't
the
there?
The farmer.
Like, the farmer. He doesn't have any money or something like that. So that was a legitimate way of playing video games. And you know, it's loosely historically based, so it's more of a learning experience for people. It's not just playing Mario or
something. Did you play
like
any
that.
Other than those two?
You know, I learned how to type using typing programs that were kind of like video games. I learned how to touch type using, I forget what it's called. It might have even been called QWERTY. Like there was little creatures called QWERTYs that you would help do things. And it was very strict about where you had to start your fingers, and it would do repetition and phrases so you could practice doing awkward finger motions. Like, you know, how if you're trying to type something and you have to reach up to the P and then in the next word reach down to like the B or something like that, it's hard. So it made like skill-based games on typing. Yeah. So I think I learned how to touch type from video games.
Cool.
But other than that, I mean, it's basically the same things that you said.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it's really progressed at all. I feel like kids still, they might use the internet more. I think that's probably the big leap as far as computers go. I don't know about video games.
I don't know. I mean, I don't hang around with a lot of middle schoolers.
Yeah.
I don't think it's allowed. So I don't really know what games they're playing in school. I mean, in the Wii example, it's a sports game. So this is covering PE courses.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different from, you know, trying to learn vocabulary.
It's not a scholarly thing.
Just to talk about the more modern example of the Wii thing, I'm not even sure that even fits very well other than being the gimmicky thing. So I understand that the school is snowed out. Mm. But, I mean, part of the reason we played Oregon Trail was because there's something to learn there that to a certain extent is invaluable, right? The experience of you doing it yourself. You know, when your sister dies from cholera, it, you know, brings the theories home a little bit. When you're playing Wii Sports, is it really bringing home that idea of, you know, friendly competition or whatever the hell you're supposed to be learning in PE?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't know if you're really supposed to be learning anything in PE. I think it's just to get kids out of the classroom and let them run around for a little bit. And if you're snowed in, then it's hard to do. And also, sometimes kids don't like PE.
No, like, I didn't like PE.
Well, but you probably would have liked it more if DDR and Wii Sports was involved.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why they're doing it. I could see that as an appealing reason to incorporate video games into PE.
I could. Maybe I'm just being cynical, but just suck it up and do PE, you know? I understand it's snowing, so you
can't go outside. Hit the track, Albor!
The thing is that Wii Sports is not an adequate substitute for actually going outside and playing games. And I understand that it's snowing outside, but there's a lot of indoor activities you could do. You know, you could do table tennis or something.
I don't think they're replacing everything with the Wii. I just think this is something to get kids a little bit more enthusiastic into it. As far as the English thing goes, I think that's a great idea. I have a really hard time learning other languages, and I think it's always easier if it's something that doesn't feel like I'm sitting down to learn a language.
Yeah, I agree.
If I had something on a DS that, like, conversely, if I was using it to learn Japanese rather than them using it to learn English, I think I'd probably do better at it because it's something that I'm familiar with in terms of a video game. I'm more comfortable in that medium.
Yeah.
And then it wouldn't feel so much like drudgery, just like conjugating verbs, you know?
Yeah. I mean, my concern is, well, a couple things. One is, and I'm not an expert on how people learn things. Mm-hmm. And I understand there's certain programs like, you know, Rosetta Stone and various other computer programs that assist you in that. But it feels like it's something that must be relegated to supplementary to the basic education of having someone speaking to you in that language.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if, you know, what they're doing in Kyoto is relying solely on the DS, mm-hmm. you know, but there's something to say for having that human interaction in the learning process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it goes the same for PE, you know, mm-hmm. and the same for any form of video games in the classroom. Because I think it's important to have that human interaction when you're learning. And so if, you know, video games are being relied too heavily on in that education process, you know, I would be a little concerned.
So what do you think the pedagogical limitations of video games are? It has to be a teacher. Like, you can't be completely without an instructor.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, you have to have someone at least leading it, basically.
I'm hesitant to go forward with such a brash claim because I love technology. I think I think it's almost limitless.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think there's an important aspect of human contact, and maybe not even just learning, but the school process.
Mm-hmm.
In middle school, high school, and grade school, you know, I think that the interaction between teacher and students is an important one.
Mm-hmm.
And if you rely too heavily on technology being some sort of intermediary between yourself and the instructor, mm-hmm. you may be losing out on something.
Yeah. On the other hand, the way I always, I think I've learned a lot of things through video games through osmosis. When I was a kid playing the Final Fantasy games, when I would be mentally calculating how many battles I needed to fight in order to level up, uh-huh. I was doing things like multiplying, dividing, estimating that teachers were trying to teach me at the same time.
And failing.
Well, yeah, and because I didn't really, you know, I didn't want to be in school. I'd rather be playing outside, or I'd rather be playing a video game. But then I was like, okay, I need to level Terra up 5 levels, or I need to just get to the next level, and I need X amount of experience points to do it. Every enemy in this area seems to be giving me Y amount of experience points, and then making a quick mental calculation about how many battles I'll need to fight in order to get up there.
Yeah, you're right. You're definitely right that the osmosis aspect of it, people will learn from playing video games without even meaning to.
Yeah.
And so that's something that, you know, teachers could use strategically. Mm-hmm. Like, just leave Oregon Trail running, or leave, you know, Final Fantasy running, or have that option. That's why I think, you know, having that option in school libraries mm-hmm. could be useful.
Yeah. Oh, back to our pipe dream of the game library. Yeah. Someday.
But yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me because I think that it is important to have that interaction there. At the same time, I've had some really bad teachers where I felt I learned more by skipping class and playing video games than going to that classroom. You know, maybe that's why I'm terrible at math today, because I had some really bad math teachers and we weren't playing these video games.
Yeah.
Know? My other concern is actually an economic one, and that is that how many Wiis can you buy, mm-hmm. and how can you incorporate the entire class? Schools are getting incredibly large. It's not feasible mm-hmm. today, at least in the United States.
Well, especially in California, too. Our public schools are a mess.
I think we're like 37th or 47th on like the least education spending for states.
Yeah, and it's just it's a question of resource allocation and huge numbers of students.
Right.
So that is true.
And I mean, you figure how much it would cost to get 30 DSs for a classroom. I'd rather have that go towards maybe hiring another teacher or even a part-time teacher.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And then the other issue is something like the Wii Fit and PE. They're not going to buy, you know, 30 Nintendo Wiis so everyone can play at the same time. That's mm-hmm. not feasible. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have, you know, 4 kids rotating on it. It creates a weird economic dynamic in a classroom that I think should be free of economic.
Yeah, it's hard, and it's not that it's only the video games are expensive. You know, I mean, a Wii costs $250, but textbooks easily cost upwards of $100.
That's true.
You know, I mean, it's just hard to know what to spend your money on.
But what is the lifetime of a textbook? You know, they're not going to be updating it as often, or, you know, if they do update it, you could keep your own copy and use it repeatedly. If it breaks down, I mean, a book's not going to break down.
Well, a video game's not going to break down. I mean,
look at these kids. They're going to trip over one of those, you know, cables.
But the Oregon Trail that I played, I mean, I played Oregon Trail on an Apple IIe up through middle school.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not like it expires.
Yeah, that's true.
I just think that as long as it's supplementary, I mean, in the picture and the news story that we're using, it's clear that they're inside a little gym or multi-purpose room, and there's exercise bikes and treadmills and other stuff like that. So, you know,
it's not part of their gym equipment.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And maybe if the DS was part of, I remember when I was in grade school for a few years when budget cuts were real bad, we did not get our own textbooks. We had to keep the books in the classroom because every class would use the same set of books.
Oh, man.
And so maybe they could do that with the DSs.
You know? Oh, I mean, you're going to give someone a DS to take home?
No, not to take home. No, you could only use it in... But I mean, it seems like a lot of kids already have some kind of handheld video game device or a computer or something like that. Yeah. So that's one way maybe that you could circumvent the budgetary constraints that you were talking
about. Little Jimmy already has a DS, so...
Yeah. Yeah, and so that means you don't need to buy it.
Unfair advantage. Uh-oh.
Well, you know, I mean, it's an imperfect world that we live in. I'm sure it's the same in Japan when they're trying to pilot this DS thing.
Yeah.
One thing before we go on to a little bit of a bigger discussion about learning in video games is that another thing that I really got from video games as far as skills was resource allocation. Mm-hmm. If you have a bucket of experience points and you need to figure out how best to use them, I learned a lot of that from video games, because in school we weren't really taught how to budget.
Yeah. And well, the school didn't know how to budget.
I really do. In all seriousness, I think this is one of the biggest problems in America, that people don't know how to budget. I mean, people don't know how much money they have versus how much money they need to spend versus how much money they will get in the future. I mean, that's basically the reason why we're in economic trouble right now.
Yeah.
Is because people didn't realize how to allocate things correctly.
If only people had played Final Fantasy.
I mean, this is not even a Final Fantasy thing. I mean, Final Fantasy is rudimentary. I mean, I'm sure...
Harvest Moon or something?
Something like that. I mean, there are lots of things in video games where you have to make hard decisions about what kinds of skills and what kinds of items you want.
Whether or not to kill a little sister, you know.
Well, I mean, harvesting Adam is one thing. But I just think that a lot of the way I budget things, even today with real money, comes back to things that I was doing as a kid in video games. Because, you know, if you want the lightning power, and you can buy it from the shop, but that means you won't be able to get the healing power.
Yeah,
you know, you have to be willing to make that trade-off, and you have to know which one is cooler to have and flashier, and which one will allow you to progress in the game.
And there's been countless times where I'll regret making that decision in a video game, and, you know, that's valuable.
It's experience. So when you're doing it in real life, it's like, wow, maybe I should buy a brand new TV right now. Oh, but I'm really hungry. I haven't eaten for a while. Well, I guess I should have some food. I think resource allocation is one of the big things that I learned from video games.
Yeah.
So now on to the more philosophical thing about, can video games stand alone as instructional devices?
Right.
Like, and can you use a video game to teach a lesson about something?
I like this idea, especially when thinking of, and I think about this in higher education, but the same could be said for high school, right? And this is the idea that video games are a cultural artifact, and we use cultural artifacts all the time
to teach things.
Yeah. You know, when we're in a history class, for example, they'll a lot of times cite pieces of literature or show portions of a film in order to show you real life examples and bring you connected to those characters, because you're taking really lofty terms and sometimes it's hard to comprehend exactly what that means. When people are describing the Great Depression, you know, it's a little bit difficult to get across exactly how tough times were.
Yeah.
So people will show or read, you know, the not the Great Gatsby, but the Grapes of Wrath.
Yeah. Or they'll take out the Dorothea Lange photographic collection.
Exactly.
Or they'll do the newsreels of the time showing the droughts and things like that.
I mean, we'll use primary documents, but we'll also use fictions.
Yes.
And we'll also use things not even written in that time period, but that illuminate that human condition in that context very well to make people create connections in their mind, you know, between things that you're studying. You know, if you're talking about poverty and gender and economics all at once, sometimes it's really tough to imagine those in conjunction unless you see a fictional or even a real life example of where that's taking place. And I think video games fit really well into that medium, because I think you can use them as cultural artifacts almost as if they're not video games, you know?
Yeah, and I think one of the ones that jumps out at me right away, and this is probably just because I was playing it very recently, was BioShock. I think BioShock does a really good job of presenting some philosophical concepts in a succinct but not overly simplistic way. It shows what happens when people buy into a philosophy wholeheartedly and leave any perspective behind. And I think if you're in a philosophy class like that and you're trying to look at different examples of objectivism from text, from political theories, and then from art, it could be a valuable thing to show or to have people play in class.
Yeah. My only concern is that because video games are such long experiences, it's hard to show that in clips. And it's really unfortunate, because BioShock is a great example. You know, if you're teaching a class on objectivism and you're reading some Ayn Rand, it would be a fantastic supplement to have your students play some BioShock. The problem is BioShock's a pretty long game.
Yeah.
And like we said about the economics issue, it's hard to get people, you know, all interacting with it.
Yeah.
There's a difference, and we recognize it because that's what makes video games so freaking awesome, is the difference between playing the video game and watching the video game.
Yeah.
So you could even show clips or screenshots from BioShock, but you're missing out a little bit on the actual experience.
I'm feeling it.
So if you wanted to give people that experience and say, you know, here, play BioShock, you're incredibly limiting yourself. So it almost feels like video games used in that example cannot be used in the same way that they should be used, and that's in that the students are playing them.
Yeah.
I can give a slideshow lecture on BioShock, explain the plot, and maybe get some audio clips off of YouTube, and I can give a class a general idea of what, you know, 2K was doing with this game and where some of the philosophies are coming from, and use it as a really good example.
But it's different from watching a film, because a film is meant to be watched. But if you're watching a video game, well, video games are really meant to be played, and so you might not be getting the full effect of something like that.
And I think probably you and I would do a better job of using it in a classroom than a teacher who's inexperienced with video games.
Yeah, that's
because
true.
Because the fact is mechanics are involved in the game.
Yeah.
You know? How you experience a video game dramatically affects how you interpret that video game.
Mm.
And for a teacher who's never played video games, like, you know, a lot of teachers are in America, a lot of professors are unaware of the, you know, the informational power of video games, that it's difficult for them, I would imagine, to explain to their students how a video game succeeds in that regard. Like, if you were to give a BioShock lecture, you'd have to include, you know, the little sister choice and how, you know, the first-person shooter mechanic makes sense with the Vita chambers, which makes sense with the splicers, and how all of these together, in terms of how you actually play the game, affect the philosophy. You know?
It is hard, especially with something like BioShock, because I don't know if it could stand... Well, what I'm more interested in this question about, like, can video games be used for teaching, it seems like we oftentimes supplement texts with films, but I don't know if we could do the same thing with games, maybe because it's too, they're too similar to films. It would just be redundant, and we'd have to figure out a new way of using video games for teaching.
Just stop using film.
Well, we could, but then, you know, we... One thing that I was thinking about, if you're in a... in a class like a political science class or statistics or something like that, you could use a game like Boom Blocks to talk about game theory.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you are playing the game where each of you has a castle and you need to fight against each other, it's like the Prisoner's Dilemma, basically. Oh, yeah, it's the
Prisoner's Dilemma.
You know, like, if you fight against each other, you'll just wear the, you'll wear your opponent down, but you'll be wear down as well, and then be picked off by the next person.
It's funny. Yeah. I didn't think about political science, but video games fit really well.
Yeah.
You know, something like The Sims in a political science game
would
be fantastic to look at,
yeah,
because the game is going in with certain assumptions. Mm-hmm. You know, they put a value to, you know, lower taxes, and they have a certain effect.
Mm-hmm.
So the game is taking a philosophical stance, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're, if, say, for example, The Sims is operating under a, you know, a liberal mindset, the results can be played out in a very real-time example by playing The Sims. And the same can be said for
then
playing
something... you want to show, like, oh, well, you know, this is what happens in a liberal economy, kids. And this is what happens in a fiefdom.
Yeah.
And then you set your up your Sim City as if there was a king.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it could be said with, like, Civilization. Right?
Yeah.
And it's interesting because part of the reason political science is so interesting to me is because a lot of the philosophies are self-fulfilling prophecies, right? Where if you go into the world with these assumptions, things make sense, right? But those assumptions aren't necessarily correct. If you were to give a teacher the ability to change those sets of assumptions based upon how people see the world, that could be a really powerful educational tool for students from high school through college about how people see the world will result in certain, you know, actions being taken.
And I think on the... on the historical side of things, I'm really interested in trying to incorporate video games into the study of history, because not only can they be used to describe certain philosophies and political science aspects of you know, how governments are created, but they're also signs, they're also signs of where the culture was when they were released.
Yeah.
And so I think we're now finally getting to the point where we have a few decades of history to look back on, and we can really see, well, you know, what was happening in the 80s, in the late 80s, and, well, throughout the 80s, actually, there was a lot of Cold War-style games. Even things like Metal Gear were Cold War games. And it's just... and my favorite is that there's an old NES game called Rush and Attack. It's like Rush and Attack, but it's called Rush and Attack. And it just, there's just a lot of... And there's things that are more subtle than that. But I think video games are now to the point where we have a lot of history about them, and we have a little bit of critical distance, and we can take a look at what they say about our society. Because they're, like you said, they're cultural artifacts, and there's something to be said for studying them, just as if you would do film history, art history, social history, whatever. I mean, they're all wrapped up in how we see ourselves. And I think that's how you can have video games stand alone in a class, if you were to look at the history of America in the 90s through video games.
Mm-hmm.
What are the kinds of choices we make in our play say about us at any given time in history?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that it's just, it's a shame because of the limitations of the medium in terms of having to have the console there,
yeah,
you know, and having to incorporate that into the class. And that's why I think it's really cool to see the classes that are focused solely on video games, because it means that they're going into it knowing that they're going to overcome that limitation. Saying, look, you're going to have to fit in some emulation time on your own.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I'm going to have, you know, office hours with the Xbox or,
yeah,
you know, like all the stuff Michael Abbott is doing. But there are others who are incorporating video games into their, you know, college curriculum. And it's cool to see them tackle it in a way that addresses video games through a broad way,
not and, only and the pushes, content, pushes but... for the liberalization of access to them as well.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, you have to take them seriously content wise, but you also have to seriously fight for liberal access to them.
Yeah,
because you can't just keep things locked up if you're gonna make an argument that they're important to the society.
Yeah,
you know, you can't have, you need a library. Yeah. So basically, now we need a library. We need to start our own library, and we need to start our own school.
Yes,
and design our own curriculum.
Uh-huh.
All right, let's go out and get some venture
Done.
Capital.
Let's do it.
Yeah,
if any millionaires are out there listening.
Yeah, well, like I said, if there's any millionaires out there, you should hit us up, experiencepoints@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from our listeners, questions, comments, your own thoughts about how video games are used in learning and your own experiences with video games and learning.
Yeah, and if you have, you know, millionaire friends, let them know to visit experiencepoints.blogspot.com. We update Monday, Wednesday, and Friday evenings.
Yeah, so until then, have fun learning.
Have fun. Goodbye.